Let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
That would be my cue to go, correct?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Welcome inside the playbook. It's a Thursday. It's Seattle game week for the New England Patriots. I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino from PFW is here as well as we count it down a little bit further to the second of two-week West Coast road trips for the Patriots. Sunday afternoon, 4:15 Eastern against the Seahawks.
I'm looking forward to the trip, John, if for no other reason that I've never been to Seattle. Never been to the Pacific Northwest. And
I've only been once
heard
myself.
Good things about it.
I've been once myself, and frankly, it was a glorified stopover. It was for 10 hours.
Oh, really?
You know, so I didn't really get to see a lot. I got away from the airport because we knew we were going to be stuck for a while. So we said, let's take a cab and go into the city and go to the Space Needle or something. And basically, that's what we did.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I got in. I've been to Washington State. I've been to Spokane.
Where Gonzaga is, right?
Yes. I've actually been Mount Hood, you know, that area as well, and actually kind of jogged across the border between Oregon and Washington there. But I haven't – that's the one state of I'm going to digress here, but I've got to start the story now because you got me going here. I'm on a quest in my own life here.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to fill in everybody.
Okay.
I'm on a quest for 50 and 50. Can you gather what that means?
50 and 50.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 50 states.
Yes. Before I turn 50.
Before you turn 50. You want to hit all 50 states before you turn 50.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I am at 47. I've got three more to go.
Really?
Three more to go. And I've had three more to go, really, for the last, 10 years.
Oh, so you've been procrastinating. You could have gotten this done.
Yeah, kind of. But I guess it's partly because...
What are the three?
They're Upper Midwest, North Dakota, South Dakota, and believe it or not, Minnesota.
Oh, really?
I have never had the opportunity to go. I've actually had flights that I thought were going to route through Minneapolis, you know, like Northwest Airlines something. And I'm like, oh, cool. I got to get out of the airport. Stepping on the ground is one thing, but I got to be there, you know. An airport stopover, if I don't get off the plane, it doesn't count. And I haven't counted that. And Washington, for me, to get back to the original point here, is the other closest state that I've been to that could be considered just an airport stopover. Mm-hmm. Now, I did spend, 10 hours in Seattle, and I have been to Spokane, and I have been to the Mount Hood area. We went right after Mount St. Helens. We went up that direction and saw all the ash and did all that stuff. This was back in the early 1980s.
Right afterwards?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, right after. I happened to be up in Portland for a tournament, and we said, we got to go. So we went across the border and took the trip up, and, you know, they had a lot of it still cordoned off and everything, but you could just see the ash all over there. It was a spectacular sight. Anyway. That gets back to my original point, but the fact is that I'm in a quest for 50 and 50, and I wanted to hit 50 states before I turn 50, and I turn 50 next summer, next July.
Oh, so you only have a year left.
So I got less than a year, and I really have kind of procrastinated about this over the last at least 5 to 7 years. A lot of it is because, A, I have family, B, my job takes me out all over the place anyway, and I just don't have time to focus on completing this quote-unquote, you know, silly quest, as my wife puts it.
But those last three states are in such close proximity.
Yes, they are.
You could get it done in one trip.
I already have it planned,
Eric.
You could
get it done in one trip.
I got it planned. I'm flying in. In fact, my goal is I believe it's next May. I've looked at the Red Sox schedule. And when they play the Twins.
Okay.
And I was going to fly into Minneapolis.
Yep.
All right. And then I'm going to rent a car. And I've already got the map route route mapped out.
Yep.
I'm driving to North Dakota, then taking the highway straight down
to
into
what,
South
Pierre?
Dakota.
Fargo.
Fargo.
I'm sorry.
I'm driving from Minneapolis to Fargo. And then I'm taking the route straight down Fargo. Well, there's the map over there. You can pretty much see it, I think.
Right.
And going straight down, hitting the upper northeast corner of South Dakota. And then I'm jetting straight back eastward to Minneapolis. It's like a big triangle. You can do it.
Yeah.
And what I'm hoping is maybe we have some listeners today that either are in the area or know the area.
Yep.
and can tell me how far away is it from Minneapolis to Fargo?
Now,
you know, is it doable in a day? I mean, it should be, I would think.
Let's take a look at the map.
All right, Eric's going to take a look at the map. Because this is what I have planned for, like, next May, and I was going to try to work this trip in and around a Red Sox game or something just to make it worth my while, you know, to go. You know, everybody says, well, you got to go to Mall of America and ride the roller coaster and all that kind of stuff, too. But, I mean, that's basically, you know, you talk about silly quests in life. If I can hit it before next July 22nd, then I will have hit 50 states.
It looks to me like you could do it in a day. It might be
the
a long
whole
day.
Trip?
No, to get to Fargo from
Minneapolis. Oh, yeah, I think I could do Fargo in a day.
It might be a long day.
Then
I would probably
stay over and then, you know, just see Fargo, spend the night in Fargo, whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, that's a big thrill, but I would still do it. And then I think I would probably try to go Fargo to South Dakota, depending upon how far south I go, and then back to Minneapolis in another day.
You would you'd be remiss, though, if you didn't hit Mount Rushmore.
I know, but I mean, how much further away is that?
I don't know, but it's
what part of the state of South Dakota is Mount Rushmore in?
I don't know.
See, I don't have enough knowledge of South
Dakota. But it'd be worth looking into, because if you're going to go to South Dakota, why not?
I totally agree, because to me, that would be like the only thing in South Dakota really worth seeing.
Verification of your trip would be to see Mount Rushmore.
Go Mount Rushmore. I agree. So if I could try to figure out a way to squeeze that in, that's a definite. But I may only have like a 3-day window to get all of this in.
Well, look it up, or have one of our fans do
a MapQuest
thing.
That's what I'm hoping. So webradio@patriots.com. I had no intention to do that today, but...
You have less than a year left, John. You have no time to waste.
I've got until next July, you know, middle of next summer, you know, to basically, you know, fill out this quest. But then I will have been in all 50 states. So your original point was you had never been to Seattle. Have you ever been to Washington State?
No.
See, then you're going to knock out a state.
I am.
How many of the states do you think you've been to? As you look at the map, you get a look over your shoulder.
Well, I haven't been to Hawaii or Alaska.
I've been to both.
I've been to all the New England states except Vermont.
What?
I know it sounds weird. And
have you never been to Vermont?
Honestly, I've never been.
Were you born here?
Yeah. I just have never been.
Oh my God, that's just sad. Talk about provincialism in New England. Holy crap, Eric.
I think I'm at about half, though. I think I'm in about half the states.
About 25 or so?
I think so.
Okay. Wow. Well, obviously, I've got the three in the upper Midwest, that little pocket, you know, which is, you know, it's just been bugging the hell out of me.
Well,
I got to get it done.
Especially when you're so close.
I know. Minnesota's the one that really doesn't make any sense. I mean, because, like I said.
I'm surprised at that, because with basketball and football,
and everything else. But for some reason or another, it's one of those little quirks of my schedule. I have never made a trip into Minnesota. I've done Wisconsin. I've done Iowa. You know, I've done Michigan. I've even done the UP of Michigan, the Upper Peninsula.
Right.
I just have never been to freaking Minnesota. So I got to go.
Wow.
I've been to Nebraska. You know, I've been to Wyoming, Montana, Idaho. Idaho's
Wyoming
beautiful.
Must be great.
Wyoming's fantastic. Wyoming, Idaho, Montana. Those three states, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. They're desolate, but they're
great,
beautiful.
Great place to have like a cabin or a home,
absolutely.
A second home out there, right?
Well, now you know why Drew Bledsoe has his place in Montana.
I don't blame him at all.
You got a ranch out there. That's the place to have a ranch would be Wyoming or Montana. That would be my guess.
I think everybody who's an American should try to hit all 50 states at some point in their life.
I totally agree. I started on this quest at a very early age when I was probably my youngest son's age, around 13, 14.
Mm-hmm.
It's because when we were younger, and I'm the oldest of three kids in my family, we took family vacations and, you know, in the car because I had family that lived, that were in the military. And so we drove to like Georgia and we drove up here to the Northeast, you know, because we had somebody stationed in, you know, Groton and Connecticut. And we did the upper, you know, we did the Midwest and we did the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I was probably like 21, I'd been to like 30 states.
Really?
Honestly.
That's pretty good.
And so it's
a big
chunk. It was a very large chunk just because we had driven, you know, I grew up in Texas. So, I mean, you take a trip to Georgia, you're going to hit Texas, and we actually hit Arkansas. Then came back down through Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia. I mean, you're talking about 6-7 states right there. And then if you drive to like Washington, D.C. and New York City, which we did as kids, then you're going to cut, you know, the Carolinas, Virginia, Maryland, got a little West Virginia, Delaware, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
I mean, you cut a lot of states out if you hit the major highways in this country,
mm-hmm.
a lot of states. So it's definitely worth it. And, you know, and of course, growing up in Texas, I had Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, New Mexico pretty much, you know, sacked anyway.
I'm going down the list. I'm trying to give you an exact number.
Cool. I'd be interested. I would love to hear. And Frank, you know, I realize this has nothing to do with football, and I apologize for this greatly. I'm getting off on a huge tangent today, but this is, you know, Eric just kind of struck a chord with me, and it's a passion of mine. I would love to know from fans how many of the 50 states they've been to. I would love to know. And those of you who live overseas, if you traveled into the states, how many of you hit to? How many of you hit? I would also like to know if you live in Europe, and I know we have a very large fan base in the UK, especially. How many of the other countries in Europe do you go to on a relatively regular basis? I mean, do you drive the Channel all the time
to
get to France?
I love going to Europe.
Yes, I do too. And the first time I went to London was 2.5 years ago for a family wedding and absolutely adored it. It's fabulous. Love the UK.
I
would love to go to Wembley next year when the Patriots play the Buccaneers.
You should. I think we could find a spot for you on this trip.
Well, you know, I'm hoping. I know it's Tampa Bay's road, you know, home game, but I'd love to go and do the PA.
Oh, my God, that'd be great.
How great would
huh?
that be to do the PA at Wembley Stadium?
Now, you would have to affect a British accent if you did it, though, John. No?
Well, I think I could do that, mate. Oh, that's Australian. I'd have to work on it. I'll work on it. No, I got to give him a, that's good for another Patriot. You know, I could give him another one of those. That'd be fine. And we get everybody fired up in the UK over that. I would love to do it. So maybe we need some of our UK fans, you know, to, you know, start the ball rolling here and send the notes to Fred and say, you know, you got to bring Rook to do the PA at Wembley. Otherwise, it's just not going to be a Patriots game. And I realize it's not a Patriots home game. So the Bucs may have control over all the game day operations. That would be my guess since
Maybe.
It's their home game. But we'll see. You never know. Time will tell. So Eric's now busy counting up his list of 50 states that he's been to.
I have not been to 22 states. And if you... I will knock Washington off on this trip.
So that'll be 21?
So that'll be 21.
So you've been to 29?
I've been to 29 states.
That's great. That's a good total. See, I think most people, when you stop and think about it, and that's the unique thing about the United States.
And by that, too, I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no.
I mean, I actually spent time there. It wasn't like a flight layover.
That's okay.
I actually spent
now,
time
I
there.
Now, I don't count plane layovers, stopovers. I mean, if you land, like you've never been to Arizona, and you're laying over in Phoenix on the way to, you know, Sacramento or whatever, doesn't count.
No.
But if you got off the plane,
walked around,
and you went outside the terminal,
right.
Or you took a cab and went into the city,
right.
And maybe 2 hours later you came back, I'll count that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you made an effort to go see some of the city. Or if you took your picture by, you know, Phoenix City Limits sign or something.
That's
okay,
enough.
All right,
yep.
It counts.
It does count.
It counts. But, you know, if you're sitting on the tarmac waiting to take off again, or you're in an airplane terminal waiting to take off again, no count.
Right.
Doesn't
like
count.
This year I went to Egypt and I had to stop over in Heathrow in London.
Mm-hmm.
But I never left Heathrow.
You went to Egypt?
Yeah.
What was that like?
The most amazing experience.
I would love to go see the pyramids. That's one of my goals in life.
You should. Yeah, absolutely.
I got to go
shut
see
up, too, Gender.
I believe you went to Egg Pipe.
Shut up.
To where?
Shut up. Don't listen to him.
I'm missing out here. I'm missing out on the joke.
I misspelled it online once, and he never let me live it down.
He spelled Egypt as egg pite.
Egg pite?
E-G-P-Y-T-E.
P-Y-T-E? That's pretty funny, actually. All right, egg pit.
But I don't count having been in London
because
I didn't see anything but Heathrow.
Okay.
So when I go next year, if I'm still here.
That's outstanding.
The team.
Yeah.
Then, that'll count.
Yeah, we have to say that around here nowadays, don't
well,
we?
I don't want to take anything for granted.
I know. You know. Listen, that's the least thing. The last thing I want to do is take something for granted.
But 29 states out of the 50 I've been to.
That's a great number.
Or I will after this weekend.
That's a great number. And frankly, I do believe seriously that most Americans have been to more states than they think.
Mm.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly. Life's way too short,
mm-hmm.
okay? You got to get out and got to see things and got to do things. That's part of enjoying life and interacting with fellow man. And one thing I love about the job that I have, you know, in covering football and basketball is that I get to go to places that I probably would never have gone to.
Oh, absolutely. This job has helped me knock off a
lot of those Morgantown, West Virginia.
Oh, God,
okay?
Yeah.
Who would go through there? Unless, you know, you live in West Virginia, who the hell would go there?
Right.
With all due respect, you know?
Right.
Greenville, South Carolina. I mean, Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Charleston, South Carolina is pretty
Charleston's
nice.
Great.
You ever
Charleston's
been to Charleston?
Nice. Yes, I have.
That's great.
Fayetteville.
Civil War era city.
Yes. Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Blacksburg, Virginia. Yeah, home of Virginia Tech.
Yep, never been
home
to
Mississippi
either,
State.
Yeah, you've been for college games.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Great stuff. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Now, obviously, NFL teams are in major cities.
For the most part, yeah.
For the most part. But, you know, Green Bay, Wisconsin. Would you go to Green Bay if it weren't for the Packers?
Probably not.
No.
But you might go to Milwaukee if you are a Harley-Davidson enthusiast.
Yes, which I have done, not necessarily as a Harley-Davidson enthusiast, but I've been to Milwaukee, obviously, many times.
As a beer enthusiast, you would want to go to Milwaukee,
I remember,
right?
The first time I went to Milwaukee, we flew into Milwaukee, and we specifically rented a car to drive to Green Bay.
Really? For a game?
No, just to go to Green Bay, because it was the home of the Packers.
To see what it...
Yes.
All the hubbub was about.
Yes, yes.
And what is it like? I've never been to Green Bay.
It's really unassuming.
A small town?
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like a small town that has a lot of extra, like, baggage packed onto it. It's not really it doesn't have a thriving metropolis feel to it.
There's no downtown, really, right?
No, there's not a really, like, skyscrapers? No.
Right.
No, we don't get that. I mean, there's an area, you know, that obviously you can tell is downtown, but by my recollection, this has been probably 6 or 7 years ago, you know.
Sure, it hasn't changed that much.
No, I can't imagine, but I have to tell you, you know, Lambeau is impressive on the outside. It's big, it looks, you know, ominous, and then when you think about all the history that's been there, you know, it's kind of like, wow, that's really it. Mm. That's really it. You know, that's the frozen tundra, you know, mm-hmm. and so that part was really cool. You know, you go by the Packers store and you go do the, you know, and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And I've been to Madison, Wisconsin for, UW stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously.
Did you jump around?
Yes, as a matter of fact. Did all of it. Went to Camp Randall and, you know, did all the, mm-hmm. you know, stuff that they do. And, yeah, you have to while you're there. That's the other thing I want to do, you know, in my sports life. I want to go to I've never been to a game, believe it or not, as much as I've covered college basketball now for 30 years. I've never been to, much less covered, a game at Cameron Indoor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we've never had a chance. We played Duke, but it's always been on a neutral site.
Right.
And I want to go, and I want to jump with the kids.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just to do it.
URI almost knocked off Duke.
Yeah, I know.
Their season.
Hell of a game. Played very well. Boy, we're digressing now, aren't we?
Yeah, but it's a good digression.
Well, that's okay. That's all right. I totally
good digressions
I
are
totally
okay.
Understand it. By the way, in case you'd really like to talk about some particular, oh, look at here, David sent us the email. He says driving directions to Fargo, North Dakota.
Oh, good.
Okay.
How far?
Says 238 miles from Minneapolis, which is about 3 hours and 36 minutes.
Oh, that's plenty.
Make that.
You can do that.
Now, driving directions to Mount Rushmore.
From Fargo or from Minneapolis? I would assume
he
from
doesn't
Fargo.
Say. I'm assuming though. He says I'm assuming that's from Minneapolis. David, you'll need to write back and tell us where the Mount Rushmore directions are, because he says it's 598 miles.
That's about six
that's
and a
eight,
half.
Eight hours, he yeah. says, here, if you're going the speed limit.
That must be from Minneapolis, then.
Got to be.
What about from North Dakota? Because if you
then
go
he says
route,
driving directions to Mount Rushmore as well, and I'm assuming one of these two is from Fargo.
Okay.
Because there's another one here that says driving directions to Mount Rushmore. It says 630 miles.
Wow.
Which would
so
be
either
a
way,
nine-hour
long...
trip. It's a long trip.
Yeah.
From Fargo or Minneapolis, it looks like it's a long trip. My guess is that then Mount Rushmore is probably in the southeastern part of the state. That's
that,
my
that
guess.
That would make sense, yeah.
Would make sense.
That would make sense.
Because you'd be going from Fargo, North Dakota, all the way to the southeastern part of... That, yeah, and that would, yep. make a, that would make sense. So southeastern part of the state, that would be my
probably.
Guess.
Probably.
Anyway, and David says, I've been to 22 states in my 42 years.
That's not bad.
No, that's good.
That's not bad.
I'd be willing to wager that most people who are 40 plus, if you've done anything, if you're in your 40s or even, you know, into your mid to late 30s, I would wager that if you did a serious count, you're probably, you know, 20 plus states.
You're at least probably around half.
Yeah. I'd say you've been to 20.
Pretty good.
Unless for some reason or another you happen to live in a very large, you know, spacious state like a California
mm-hmm.
or a Wyoming or a Montana or a Texas,
yep.
and you've just had no reason to, you know, travel beyond your borders,
yep.
I would say that if you have not been to 20 states, you probably live in a big, spacious area. You know,
or the opposite, or a really small town and you don't
or
get
a small
get
town
to leave,
and you don't get out much. You know,
which is unfortunate. But.
You know, married the hometown high school sweetheart, that mm-hmm. kind of story. Which is not a bad way to go.
No, that's probably not.
Almost
bad
went
either,
that way. Didn't quite get that way, but almost went that way.
Yeah.
You know, another story to tell for another boring day.
Come on.
You know? All right, so let's also do this then via email. Number one, yes, I do want to know how many states you've been to. As we kind of started this discussion, as Eric is making his first foray into Washington State for this Sunday, number one. Number two, let's predict the score. We kind of do this on Thursdays anyway, and frankly, it's been a little bit lackluster when we predict scores on Thursday, and I think it's largely because we have complacency within Patriots Nation and with folks who listen to this program. And you know, I don't think there's any reason to be complacent. If anything, I think there's more reason to be energized over this team as it now stands, because this team is in a battle for its very, you know, postseason life, which is something that we haven't had to go through at least since 2002. Mm-hmm. And actually, we were in a battle all the way to the very last game, last minute of the last game that year in 2002. So
that's right.
We've been in the battle for the playoffs, really, Since 01.
Since 01.
Yeah,
right.
Because Bill Belichick's first year was 5-11 in 2000, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's this entire decade. We're spoiled rotten.
Mm-hmm.
And so this year is the year that you should be energized by this team because of the stories that is creating. And I talked about this a little on yesterday's show. But to me, the story, if the Patriots can run the table here and reach the playoffs, frankly, I think if they run the table, it's enough of a story. But if they reach the playoffs on top of that, that should be and may very well be by the national media a dominant postseason story.
If they run the table, that would make them 11-5. I don't see how they don't make the playoffs.
Well, mathematically, that's possible. Because if you have both Baltimore and Indianapolis run the table, which they can do, they're going to be 12-4.
Right.
So mathematically
it's possible. But
it's not likely, but right. It's possible.
Right. I should have said probable. I think it's improbable. That
and even so, if both of those teams ran the table, I mean, you know, there's still the Jets in that factor. Because I don't think the Jets run the table.
Yeah. And
they're 8-4. I don't think they win 4 straight. Do you?
I don't think it's likely.
No.
I really don't. I'm surprised they've won this many games already.
I think we all are. I mean, the Jets, to me, are one of the positive stories. If you look at it from a purely football sense, I mean, you know, I think there are a lot of Patriots fans that say, you know, piss on the Jets, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, we say a lot of different things.
One of them was on the show, just the last show.
What was that?
Fred.
What did he say about
Jets? He hates the Jets.
Oh, I know. Well, most Patriots fans do hate the Jets.
Yeah.
It's a whole New York, New England thing. I get that. You know, and in fact, I remember we did an in-stadium poll thing, one of those texting things that they're doing inside the stadium this year, and asked the fans in attendance, who's the Patriots' chief AFC East rival? Jets won or lost, as the case may be. But the Jets took about 57% of the vote that day, as I recall.
Mm.
And it was only a mild surprise because I still think a lot of people hearken back to the 1980s
Miami.
And the Miami days and the squish the fish thing and all that stuff. You know, so
But
the Jets have clearly overtaken it, and I think it's a lot of the New York-New England rivalry thing.
Yeah.
New York-Boston thing.
Yeah, I think there's some carryover between the baseball rivalry and the football rivalry, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know? That's just, it just permeates this area, the northeast of the country. It's, that's just part of, you know, what it's all about.
Don't forget we have something else we have to do for fans
Gosh,
today.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. All right. Those of you that, this is going to be a little bit of repeat for those that listen to PFW in Progress, so I apologize for this, but it could also give you another chance here.
That's right.
But for those that are tuning in, we have two tickets to give away here on the program today. To the 3D broadcast, the NFL Network broadcast, the first live game in 3D of the Raiders-Chargers game tonight. And it will be here in Foxborough at the Showcase Cinema Deluxe right here at Patriot Place.
Yep.
So obviously, you're going to have to live in the area within driving distance to be able to get these tickets. I wish I could help those of you listening in South Dakota or, you know, Fargo or, you know, UK or wherever it may be. But if you're listening in the area in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, or you want to drive down from, you know, southern New Hampshire or Maine, this is for you. All right. So we're going to give you a chance to win two tickets. We'll put your name on the pass door. Get a hold now of what's going on here. 7 p.m. tonight, the pregame tailgate reception starts, which, of course, you will be a part of if you get here by 7 o'clock. Then at 8:15 is the game kickoff. And it's the state-of-the-art theater-going experience as the NFL Network will do their very first ever game broadcast in 3D. Does that mean we're going to wear the glasses tonight?
I would think so, yeah.
Wow. I wonder what the quality of the broadcast would be if you don't look at it in 3D.
Probably just like the quality of a movie that you would see.
I have to admit, this will be very interesting. Anyway, it's here at the Showcase Cinema Deluxe on Patriot Place here in Foxborough on Route 1.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going to ask a question, right? That's
yeah,
what we're going to do. We're going to ask a question. You know the telephone number, right? 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. And please, if you, you know, can make it, we want you to answer. If you can't make it, let's leave the opportunity to somebody else. You know, don't call in and keep the phone line tied up here, you know, because we're, you know, low-budget operation here. all right, so I want you to give the questions. We were kicking this around before the show started.
All right.
And you have an excellent question. So it's a question, and the first correct answer to phone it in is going to win the two tickets to this 3D game tonight. Go.
All right. The Raiders are playing in this game tonight.
Yes,
so
the Raiders are playing the Chargers.
We decided to make it a Raider-Patriot-focused question.
Why not? Because the Raiders are the next opponent, right?
The Raiders are the next opponent after Seattle this weekend. So here's the question.
Today, Junior?
Two of the Raiders' all-time leading passers, most prolific passers in Raider history, were originally drafted by the New England Patriots. Name them.
Dan Klecko.
No, not him. No. You lose. All right, now, is it the top two or just two of the most?
Two of the most.
Okay.
Two of the most famous quarterbacking names in Raider history.
Were both originally drafted
by the New England Patriots.
Okay.
Name those two players.
I think most people can get one.
I would hope.
I think most people will get one, which
is fine. The other one's a little tricky.
That's right. But the other one is tricky, so you got to think about it.
But there it is.
Okay. So the first correct answer to that question is going to get the tickets. And you'll actually physically won't have tickets. You'll be put on the pass list. Your name will be put on the pass list, you and a guest. Two of you can enjoy the game in 3D tonight. And then what I'm hoping we can also do is whoever wins here, okay, send us an email next week and let us know what you thought about it.
Oh, absolutely, because none of us have ever seen a game.
No, and I'm curious, and I won't be able to go tonight because I've got my own broadcast to do tonight, but I would be curious to know what you thought of the whole 3D thing and whether or not you think it'll work and could be a part of NFL Network in the future.
Tonight, PC, you all right?
No, it's Saturday. I've got a coach's show tonight.
Oh, so
it's,
I was going to say.
I know.
But that's the next game on the schedule.
Yes, it is Saturday.
It's a big one.
Yeah, it's big local thing.
I won't be here either.
That's right.
Damn.
I know. You won't be here for it. All right, so 508-543-7482. Let's see if somebody wins the tickets. You got a chance. It's a big freebie tonight. There you go. You got to name the two Raider quarterbacks, two of the top names in Raider quarterback history that were originally drafted by the Patriots. All right, fair enough.
One should be a gimme. The other one's a little bit tricky.
David sent us another one back here.
All right.
He said, sorry, I didn't notice I didn't have the origination. The direction below is for the travel triangle. Okay. So it's Minneapolis to Fargo, Fargo to Mount Rushmore, and then Mount Rushmore back to Minneapolis.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all right. So that's 238 from Minneapolis to Fargo.
Yep. So about 3 hours there.
Right. It's 598 from Fargo to Mount Rushmore, and then 630 from Mount Rushmore back to Minneapolis.
That's a long drive.
Trip.
That's a long drive. So you wouldn't be spending a lot of time in the places in your destination.
He says Mount Rushmore is near the western Wyoming border of South Dakota. So you're looking at, holy crud, you're going right across the state.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I ain't doing that.
I wonder if you could get a little
jumper?
Small plane, yeah. That'd be quicker, you know. Maybe drive to Fargo and then from Fargo.
Well, he says that's near Route 90, which runs the full width of South Dakota. So you'd have to take Route 90. Wow. That's a haul. Can you imagine anything? I mean, you know, with all due respect to South Dakota, I'm thinking bleak. I'm thinking that there better be a lot of Stuckies on the way, boy. That's all I'm saying.
It might be a long way between exits. It might be a long way. I would look into a small plane.
Yeah, I think I'd have to do that. I'd have to fly. I don't know. I mean, you're right. What's the point of going to South Dakota if you don't go see Mount Rushmore?
Really?
Seriously? You know? I do agree with that assessment. That's true.
Going to go visit Adam Vinatieri? Isn't that where he's from, South Dakota?
Yes, but I don't know. Is he considered persona non grata now? Or do people still think highly enough of him?
I don't know. You don't have to tell anybody, John. You can just go do it.
Yeah, I could do it. Well, you know, actually, a friend of mine is one of his autograph, agent guys. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, signed.
So that could be possible.
Shows for him. So I guess anything's possible, right? John in Fayetteville, Georgia writes, it took me 46 years, but I've been to all 50 states. Wow.
Oh.
He says all 56 if you use Obama's numbers.
Ah.
He says the last two were Idaho and Montana. The reason is because I'm a corporate pilot. And I travel all the time.
Well, you could knock a lot of those off.
Yeah,
quickly.
I would think so. That's excellent, John.
Good for you.
46 years, but he's been to all 50. That's outstanding. Now, I'm not a pilot, but obviously I travel a lot for a living, so that's why I've been able to do all this. And obviously, right now at this stage of my life, over the last 20 years, I've been almost exclusively Eastern Seaboard. But, this last week, I was in California all week. I've been to Vegas. I've been to Reno. I've been to Phoenix. I've been to Salt Lake City. Been several times to Denver. Almost took a job in Denver a few years ago. I've had relatives two relatives actually that have homes, second homes in New Mexico. In the mountains of New Mexico, a little ski, a little shooshing down the slopes. Clearly, I'm not doing the right thing for my living. One is a big banking executive, and another one's a corporate attorney. So I chose poorly. Let's see what else. Other out of the way states. Obviously Wyoming, I guess, would probably one because it's landlocked. I mean, it's right in the middle of nothingness, right?
Yeah.
But I actually went through Wyoming by bus as a Boy Scout back in the late 70s on my way to the National Jamboree in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Oh, yeah?
So we've shot right up through Oklahoma Panhandle, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho.
Wow.
And hit all of those at once over a period of about a month.
Wow.
And it was fabulous. My wife is 40. Mm-hmm. And she has been to, I think she counted, I want to say about 38.
That's not bad.
But when she was a teenager, she did one of those East Coast to West Coast bus trips.
Oh, yeah. So you have to make a lot of stops along there.
So they made a lot of stops along the way. And she said she knocked out in that one trip darn near 20 states.
Well, that definitely counts.
Yep. So anyway.
That's fun.
All right.
That's fun.
Cool. All right. So please send us in your thoughts on what he does say, by the way. He says, I think the final score of the game will be 31-13 Patriots.
Yeah,
are you getting the impression that's the way most people feel, which is why we're not getting a lot of feedback on this?
Maybe. I'm very nervous about this game, as we talked about yesterday, John. I see the potential for a huge upset here. Just given all the injuries that New England is suffering in the secondary, at linebacker, you know, you're playing a team that this season hasn't done too well, but they still have some talent at least on the offensive side of the ball. The Patriots need it more, which is why I think they're going to win it. But I will not be surprised at all if there's an upset this week.
Really?
I'm getting a nervous feeling about it. I still think they're going to pull it out. Like I said, I think it means more to them than it does to the Seahawks. So,
did you pick the Seahawks?
No, I didn't. But I am very nervous about it. I'm also
nervous about it, but just because of the penchant for bouncing back after a defeat. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Patriots now are what, 17-1 after a loss since 2003?
Yeah.
So I see no reason to think why they won't bounce back again. And, you know, Seattle may be the right opponent. I'd sure as heck feel a lot better about it if it was at home. But you know what? The Patriots really, I don't see a huge difference between home and away this year. Honestly, I mean, we've lost, you know.
They lost to Miami at home.
Yeah, Jets at home.
Jets at home, Pittsburgh at home.
Three home games. Three of the five losses are at home.
Right.
You know, and this, I mean, realize that this has been one of the toughest places to play since the place was built. But this year, there's been a little, there's been a chink in the armor around Fortress Gillette.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not quite as imposing as it once was.
Well, and, you know, that has a lot to do with, the injury situation. And, you know, look at all the players that they've lost this year. I mean, starting quarterback, starting safety, starting linebacker or so, just every you know, running back. It's been a devastating year. If that doesn't happen, you know, maybe those other games don't happen.
Right.
But, you know, you can't look back that way.
No, you really can't. I think they'll be able to bounce back this week. I'm going to say. Seattle's defense, oh, man. I mean, you know, they really are. I spent some time talking to Warren Moon about this yesterday, and I'm guessing, I want to say about 27-17. About 27-17.
Yeah, if they.
Which means to me that, you know, this could probably go to about midway through the fourth quarter. I'm guessing the Patriots score last to make it a two, you know, possession difference, and that takes Seattle out of it most likely. But I think Seattle will definitely have this a game into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I'm just concerned about Hasselbeck and Branch and what they can potentially
Honestly,
do.
I'm not worried about Branch. I'm really not. I kind of share the sentiments of a lot of Seattle fans. It's kind of like, wow, you know, he's never been healthy enough. And we listened a little bit to his conference call yesterday. And, you know, he's just not been healthy enough. And I realize he's as frustrated as anybody. He thought, you know, that, you know, hey, I signed a big free agent deal. I come in here and do what I, you know, did for the Patriots, you know,
he's
for Seattle.
Been injured, right.
And he's been banged up. He hasn't had a chance to do it. So I just don't know if the guy's capable anymore. And until we actually see him do it, how can you say, oh, I've got faith in him, he's going to do it. I mean, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak.
Yeah. I'm also concerned that, you know, the Patriots have been burned by some tight ends this year over the middle.
Well, that's a good point.
And Seattle has a decent one in this rookie, John Carlson from Notre Dame.
That's a good point. And I think that's got to be that's something that my guess is that Seattle is definitely paying attention to this week. You know, Hasselbeck, mid-range passes, tight end over the middle, that, you know, up the seam of the Patriots defense has been a real, Achilles heel.
Mm-hmm.
And, Sure, I would say that that's – if you have a tight end that has good hands and has decent enough speed, but more so has the ability to create an open space for himself to where he can catch the ball, a guy like, you know, Mark Whitten of the Cowboys, who I think is fabulous in doing that. Jason Witten.
Yeah,
Mark Whitten. What am I saying? Who's Mark Whitten?
I don't know.
Isn't that the baseball
Sounds like
player?
A baseball name.
Yeah, there's a baseball player for the St. Louis Cardinals, right? I do that a lot. I'm sorry. I know yesterday I caught myself right after I said it. I said James Webster instead of Jason Webster. Mm. And I caught myself right after I said, I'm not going back over it. Hell with it. So I do that a lot. Sorry. You know that my mind is in the right place, even if sometimes my mind races before my mouth catches up. That is a typical problem with a play-by-play guy. You know, it's funny. When I'm doing a game, everything just locks in beautifully. Mm-hmm. But when I'm doing a talk show, the mind races because you're always trying to think about the next thing, the next thing, the next thing.
Yeah.
And so you're thinking about it, but the mouth isn't catching up just yet.
Well,
so.
I guess that's better than the mouth racing before the mind catches up. That could get you,
That's what gets people like Don Imus and such. That's what gets them in trouble. And, you know, somebody says, oh, have you ever cursed? You know, on the radio,
on the air,
and the answer to that is yes, I have once.
On this particular broadcast,
I did on this broadcast. I did earlier. Yes, I did. Don't play it. Don't play it, Two Gender. No, I don't
think I have it anymore.
Good. Yeah, good. Gary might have taken it with him, just because he's like, I need an eye opener every once in a while. Yeah, I did it once. I did it once because I let strippers get a hold of me. By the way, strippers sent an email here with the correct answer
to the trivia question.
To the trivia question.
Really? So yes, is he going to go to the game tonight?
Well, I don't know because.
Or does he have to call in?
He has to call in.
All right.
I don't know. Doesn't he live outside the area?
I believe New Hampshire.
Okay. Well,
that's in the area.
If he can get here. 508-543-7482.
And he's got both of them?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he got them
both. That doesn't surprise me. He's usually good on those things.
I will admit, he seems to be a pretty smart football fella.
Took him longer than I
expected. Even if he is an Oklahoma Sooner. What the hell is an Oklahoma Sooner doing in New England?
Ooh. Now we're going to get into that war. I don't think we have time for that.
He doesn't want to mess with me on that one. All I'll do is say, read the record book. Who's won more? End of story.
He's getting heated already.
Why doesn't Texas fall in the Gulf of Mexico?
Why doesn't it fall into the Gulf of Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll play along. I don't know.
Because Oklahoma sucks. Oh, I'm waiting for the next comeback.
Oh, yeah.
It's coming.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Very funny.
Very funny, you guys.
All right, it's time to take a break, shall we? We'll kind of catch up on that. By the way, all right, 508-543-7482 for the two tickets to the 3D game tonight here at the Showcase Cinema Deluxe at Patriot Place in Foxborough, Oakland and San Diego. One more question. Go give it again.
Two of the most prolific passers in Oakland Raider history were originally drafted by the New England Patriots. Name them.
All right, so there you go. You got to call in for this. You have to be able to get here for the game tonight, obviously, to be able to see it. But we're giving you and a guest an opportunity to go see a history-making game. Even if, you know, it's Oakland, San Diego, it's still a history-making game within the confines of the National Football League tonight, and you can be a part of it. We're going to take a timeout here. We still want you to continue with your emails. Two questions of note. Number one, predict the score of Sunday's game against Seattle. Number two, how many states in the United States have you been to? Since that was a topic of our conversation earlier today, we'll ask that question of our numbers man, Russell Baxter from ESPN, on the other side of this.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place, a once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Are we back in town? Junior's doing a good job of spinning records.
Never left
here.
Town. Yeah, I know.
The boys will be back in town, or actually, the boys will be back on the West Coast this weekend, to be more specific, as well as we continue along with Patriots Playbook. John Rook and Eric Scalavino here from Patriots Football Weekly. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, will be joining us shortly here, as he normally does on Thursdays. But he said he was out traveling around doing stuff today, so he was calling in. And so we'll take care of that. By the way, just because Russell's going to call in and take care of the phone line, we should tell you that, you know, if you want to send an email to the question for our 3D passes tonight, you can do that.
Yeah, because Russell will be tying,
Tying up the phone line. You won't be able to get through. So, you know, as you're doing your research, frantically trying to figure it out, then just send us the email to webradio@patriots.com. Again, you still got to be able to get there today, but if you can... Okay, you're it. You'll win it because we haven't had a correct answer yet. So we have to make sure that we see if we get an answer.
Okay. You really...
Well, technically, we've had an answer.
Technically, we have had an answer.
We have an answer. We have, but
we don't... It's from someone who roots for a different team than
And I don't even want to mention it anymore, so... Funny, as you're saying that, the OU flag is flying over your shoulder. Bastards. They got so lucky. The BCS is totally, what a joke. What an absolute stinking joke it has turned out to be.
Don't get me started on the BCS.
I got to tell you, though, you know what? I've been a fan of it. I think it's worked to the point that, you know, hey, we're talking about college football with a passion and a fervor this late in the year.
Because the playoffs would be starting.
No, not as much. Under the old system, it'd be like, okay, regular season's over. Now we got to wait a month for bowl games to start.
No. Well, yeah, in the old system.
Yeah. Right.
But if they had a playoff, we'd be talking about the playoffs right now. It'd be like March Madness
in
December.
Yes, we would. But I've said this to everyone. I've said this on ESPN. I've said this everywhere that I've had a chance to talk about it. We are not going to have a playoff. It's not going to happen. The only way that it could possibly happen is if you incorporate the current bowls and the system of bowls into a playoff system.
Exactly.
But here's the problem then with that, because each bowl, even if it is the Brody Humanitarian Bowl in Boise, Idaho, each bowl thinks of itself as special, as being the game within their own community. And if you relegate them, and I put quotations around the word relegate, if you relegate them to a semifinal or a quarterfinal matchup along the road to a national championship, it lessens their importance, and therefore
I disagree.
Eric, I'm telling you, I've heard it from the bowl guys themselves.
Oh, the bowl guys say that, but the fans,
well, they're the ones you got to get convinced here to come along on this thing.
Oh, but the players, the coaches, the fans, they wouldn't consider it a letdown.
No, of course not.
Of course not. That they're going to go to these games. You think people don't go to NCAA tournament games? Of course they do.
Of course they do. Well, let's
each region. Each region that hosts an NCAA tournament game in the first round, the second round, those towns don't consider it less important than because they're not in the Final Four.
Two genders trying to tell us something.
I know what he's trying to say.
Hi, Russell.
Hello, guys. My league has 12 teams that get in the playoffs, and if you lose, you're out. And
that's right.
If you win, you keep going on.
That's right. That's right.
I like it.
It's not a sport played by men and decided by nerds.
Yeah, it's a great system. However, do you not see that the point that we're making here is that the current bowl system is not going away. There's too much money, too much time invested in it, especially from the bowl people and the communities themselves, to ever see that relegated to a second-tier status.
Oh, I...
All right. Well, you can't spell dumb without UM, and UM usually stands for ulterior motives.
Yeah, well.
Oh, I thought you meant University of Michigan.
Or University of Maryland. University of Miami.
No. I would not mess with the university. I won't mess with the U. Too many ramifications.
The U! Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, I just, it's another topic for another day, I suppose. We can get into a whole BCS
thing. Someone more. Where's Brad Edwards when you need him?
Yeah. Well, that's very true. I mean, I do believe that at some point, hopefully they can convince, the four BCS games to be national semifinals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be the logical, easy thing to do, because they've already been relegated to national semifinals anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hey, listen, it's just, to me, seems odd that you play a sport or you play a game to decide a winner, and yet you don't really do that in college football.
It's decided by
hanging chads and
it's
just an odd way to do it.
Frustrating.
That's all. I mean, I understand. Well, co-champions, everybody wins. Not really. I mean, it just it's just an odd thing to do.
What's wrong with being a co-champion?
It's nothing wrong with it theoretically. Okay, it just seems odd that you play it on the field and you decide it off the field. Are we going to get to in the next 5 years having it decided by text message and chat?
I agree with you, Russell. It's ridiculous. It should be on the field. It should be a playoff system using the bowl games.
Great idea. Let's modernize it, and the BCS can be the Bloggers Championship Series. How's that?
Yeah, well, frankly, yeah. I think there are a lot of people that think that would be more effective than what we have right now. Because the bloggers seem to know everything, right?
I read them every day, and they're always right. Not one of them has ever been wrong.
Liar!
Hey, do you want to ask Russell the question without having him give away the answer?
Yes, Russell.
You probably know.
Yeah, you can't give away the answer, because I think you probably know this, but we've got a trivia question today here for two tickets to the 3D game tonight, Oakland and San Diego. They're doing it at the Showcase Cinema here at Patriot Place.
Oh, okay.
And so we're trying to give it away, and we haven't yet had the correct answer, but we're waiting. Well, we've had a correct answer being emailed in, but since, we got you on the phone line, since we're a low-budget operation around here, we have to take the rest of correct answers via email.
Yeah, and John's a little hesitant to do that, because the first emailer that wrote in gave the correct answer, but he's an OU fan.
Yeah, I don't want to give him the
John
tickets.
Doesn't want to give him the tickets.
Oh, no. Okay.
Eric, but you do the question.
Here's the question for you.
Oh, okay.
And if you know it, just say that you do know it. Don't give away the answer.
Okay.
Since the Raiders are involved in this game, and the Raiders are going to be the next opponent for the Patriots after this weekend, mm-hmm. we've decided to make a tie-in question. Two of the most prolific, most well-known quarterbacks in Raider history mm-hmm. were originally drafted by the New England Patriots? Can you name them?
I know definitely one.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know both.
Okay.
Am I allowed to give initials?
I don't know. John. What do you think?
I know one for certain.
One should be very, very easy.
One should be very easy for everybody, yes. I think.
The other one is a little bit trickier.
Because you do have to give it a little bit of thought.
You do have to give it a little bit of thought. Okay, because I was thinking of disabled list. Like the DL.
You mean as in current DL?
No.
I don't think that's...
I don't think so.
I know the other one for sure.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I probably have to think a little more on the other one.
Okay.
So.
All right, there you go. All right, we'll let you think about it, but wow, it's unbelievable. How about that? Russell, he'll get this if he gives it some thought. Maybe that's why we haven't gotten but the one answer yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because you have to think about it a little bit. All right, fair enough. How was your holiday, by the way?
Very good.
Yeah?
A little getaway, watch some football, 3 very competitive games. As you could tell.
I was about to say, the tryptophan must have put you right to sleep, Russell.
Actually, I found out that the most competitive game on Thanksgiving Day actually took place in Tom Jackson's backyard with his daughter and his friends.
So, I love it.
Well, now, hey, hold on a second.
We had a 37-point game. We had a 25-point game. And we had a 28-point game.
Right.
But interesting. Final score was 129-39. But how's this first stat, since that's what I do.
Yep, shoot.
Winning teams on Thanksgiving Day ran for 593 yards.
Wow.
Losing teams ran for 128 combined.
Well.
It's that time of the year, boys.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what? All 3 of those games were really, really competitive at the start. They were both 0-0. All 3 of them were 0-0 to start.
They were competitive.
They were very competitive.
Early life.
Exactly.
Oh my God, that is funny!
Things went downhill right after kickoff, but it was close games up to that point.
I remember turning on the Detroit game because it's great, you know, when you're in the West Coast, like I was last week. Mm. You wake up in the morning and there's
football
games. Fabulous!
9:30 in the morning. Isn't what's
that
better than that?
That's awesome. Yep. It's absolutely awesome. So I'm turning on the television after getting up, and going down and have a cup of coffee. And there's the Detroit games already kicked off, and my son, first thing out of his mouth is, "Why are you watching that, Dad?" And I said, "Cause it's football. That's why." He's like. But it'll be over here in the next 10 minutes. And sure enough, he was right.
It's the Lions. It's Thanksgiving. It's their tradition.
Right.
You gotta watch the Lions.
Yeah.
And by the way, since we never talked last week, let's keep the Lions on Thanksgiving. I really have no problem with it whatsoever.
I don't either.
No,
even if I totally agree.
Sit here and guess. I mean, guess what? Last year's game, I know they have been horrible. Okay, they're winless. The Lions went into last year's game with Green Bay with a winning record. Did everybody forget about that?
Yep. Mm. Yeah, that's true. They did.
Okay. They hated the second half of the year.
Right.
Okay, but they did go into that game with a winning record. Okay. I mean, never mind the fact that this decade, my favorite stat of the week, the Lions have already lost 100 games this decade. They're 40-100.
Good God.
Since 2000.
Oh. Okay? I mean, that's pretty stark right there.
That's as stark naked as you can get.
No kidding. Wow.
40-100 this decade.
Hell, that's a great batting average, though.
That's not bad, yeah. I mean, you make $17 million a year if you're in baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, my goodness, but that's pathetic for football.
Yeah,
wow.
But you know what? Especially since the Lions have been so bad, I think they deserve that Thanksgiving game even more because it's like their one shining moment of the season.
Listen,
they deserve it.
That franchise was willing to do that.
Yes.
Going back to 1934,
mm-hmm.
The Cowboys jumped in their first
in the 60s,
year that the stretch really began, and people forget, 1975, 1977, the St. Louis Cardinals actually hosted Thanksgiving Day games.
Yes, they did.
Yep. 78 was the first year. So the Cowboys have been doing it 30-plus years now, but the Lions have been doing it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And
Didn't the Cowboys do it prior to that, and they had done it only a couple of times?
Yes, but as far as continuity,
continuity. They've done it consecutively since 78.
Right. I mean, I'll never forget 1974 with Clint Longley. I mean, you know, but in 75, the Cardinals, and 77, the Cardinals hosted games. Well, my point is, listen, with the NFL Network now being able to show a third game, there's an avenue for someone else to be on.
Right.
And so on.
Keep the other two.
Let Detroit. And listen, even if they're bad, what happens if they knock off a really, really good team?
Right.
Okay?
It's a great story.
That's football. If you're going to sit there and pick and choose who the good teams are going to be and they're the only ones what you want to watch, forget it. I mean, it'll be a 7-team league.
Right.
Okay? I mean, I'm not trying to put down the other teams and stuff like that, but, I mean, rarely do you have 20 teams that are really good. It just doesn't happen that way.
Right.
So to sit there and guess every year, well, let's just keep the Lions on Thanksgiving. I mean, come on. Let's, you know, listen, the Jets haven't won a Super Bowl in 40 years. No one's punishing them.
Well, I'm very much a traditionalist like you, so I don't have a problem with, you know, Thanksgiving Day being the Lions and the Cowboys.
I have no problem with it. And then if you upset when they take football off Thanksgiving.
Well, I can't imagine they would really do that. It's a great marketing tool. If you want to rotate the game, leave the Lions and Cowboys alone, and then rotate that third game that the NFL Network does at night.
What have we seen so far? Right off the top of my head, I'll do this better in the quarterbacks question. We've had Denver, Kansas City. We've had Atlanta, Indianapolis. And we've had Philadelphia, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now Arizona had not been on Thanksgiving since 1985, so there you go.
Okay.
Philly had not been on Thanksgiving since the Bounty Bowl in 1989.
Okay, wow. Right, Bounty Bowl, I remember
Indy
that.
And Atlanta were kind of recent. Denver's been on quite a few times. Kansas City on occasion. Remember, the AFL used to play Thanksgiving Day games before they joined the NFL. Mm-hmm. They had their own Thanksgiving Day thing going as well. So you're going to get more and more teams that'll be on as well. And hopefully the NFL Network will get their turkey situation all straightened out with their cable and all that other stuff. You know what? Fix that first, and then you can worry about Thanksgiving.
I agree.
You know?
I agree. I think that'd be a great way to do it, though. Keep the two traditional games, and if you want to rotate it around, then use the night game that NFL Network would show. And I think that's a great compromise to the entire Thanksgiving thing, because all these people are saying, oh, let's take it around the league, yada, yada. I said, you got to realize what the NFL is built on. The NFL is built on loyalty.
Yeah.
Correct.
More than anything else.
Actually, John, you just gave me a great marketing tool.
Okay.
Okay, since you want to rotate the game, it could be the rotisserie turkey game.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice. Rotisserie.
Butterball can spike.
They can sponsor it. Absolutely. Brought to you by Butterball.
Perfect.
It's a perfect idea.
Self-basting football. There you go.
Russell, I have to bid you adieu because I have to get back upstairs
and write. I love
when you
speak French air.
Careful now.
You and Morticia.
But I didn't want to sneak out of the studio before saying at least hello to you this week. So.
Oh, thank you very much. I mean, your covert operations get me unnerved sometimes.
Yeah, well, they get us all unnerved around here sometimes.
That's all right. For all I know, you'll be knocking outside my door in 10 minutes.
No, I have way too much to do.
Oh, okay.
But we'll talk next week.
Absolutely.
Well, there you go. Thanks. Talk to you, Eric.
No
you got
problem.
It. All right, so let's get to the schedule of games for this week then. Let's go ahead and start with tonight's game, only because it is an unusual sort of happenstance with the whole 3D thing. By the way, are you going to watch it in 3D tonight?
No, I'm going to watch it at 370, which happens to be my street address on Weiss Road.
Oh, very nice. Very
so
nice.
That's about as good.
Okay. I love how you're just able to take the lead, and then I can throw you a hard ball, a curve, a slider, and you can smack it out of the park.
I can't, you know, I really can't explain it. I don't know if it's a gift or a curse or whatever. I think it has to do with the fact that my days at College and Pro Football News Weekly, I was always able to turn a clever phrase doing headlines, because you always have to do, and we do the same thing here at ESPN, clever headlines and stuff. I remember Rick Meyer one year had a really good start, and I believe I called my graphic an Oscar for Meyer.
Ha! I like that.
You know, so, I mean, just little clever things. And
that's good,
you know, actually. You just like a little writer's knack. I miss writing because I don't write as much as I used to, so I have to use my cornball material in other facets. So.
But you can always bring your cornball material here.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Oakland and San Diego.
Well, and number one, it's obviously the unusual nature of the game because, you know, we'll have the 3D broadcast here at Patriot Place. But number two, because Oakland is next week's Patriot opponent. So,
right.
You know, we need to kind of get a look at them. If you haven't seen much of Oakland, and I can't imagine too many Patriots fans have because there hasn't been any reason to look at them.
Well, that's true. You know, I was talking with somebody today. To me, this is, listen, I get intrigued by any NFL game. I really, really do. That's why I love what I do and so on. But this one intrigues me because of the San Diego end. Now, I know they're 4-8. They are three games behind Denver.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing this game at home. They've beaten the Raiders 10 times in a row, by the way. LaDainian Tomlinson absolutely eats up the Raiders. He's not only beat them as a receiver and a runner, but he's beat them throwing touchdown passes as well. I mean, this is like his this is how, like, Jerry Rice used to be against the Atlanta Falcons. Like, just absolutely off-the-wall numbers against one opponent. It used to be, John, you'll remember how Emmitt Smith always used to do in the Cardinals.
Sure,
now, again, the Falcons are not overly great teams, but the numbers were, I'll do the numbers right, 15 games, 1,815 yards rushing and 18 touchdowns.
Ooh.
Okay?
Ooh,
52
okay.
receptions.
Yeah, wow.
Three touchdowns, and he's thrown three touchdown passes. wow. in 15 games. So in mm-hmm. other words, if you take it and you make a college stat out of it, mm-hmm. he's accounted for 21 touchdowns in the 15 game. I'm sorry, 24 touchdowns in the 15 games he's played against them. That being said, watching the Chargers stumble and bumble their way, not to steal from my friend Boomer, through this season will be very interesting to see how the mindset of them are tonight. Listen, the vultures are circling out in San Diego. I don't think there's any question about it. I know they lost Sean Merriman early in the year,
mm-hmm.
but they have just been mystifying how they've played. Let me ask you this. Do you think Sean Merriman makes this big a difference in these instances? Last year they led the league with takeaways. They had 48, John.
Mm-hmm.
They have 14 in 12 games.
Ooh, 14?
Last year they, 14.
Okay.
Last year they had an NFL-high 30 interceptions. They have 7.
Mm. Really?
I mean, they had 6 in one game last year against
yeah.
Peyton Manning.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember that. Sure, yeah, that's right. They had 6.
Right. So, I mean, right. you tell me this is all Sean Merriman, and Sean Merriman should get paid about $55 million a year.
Based on if it's really just him, right,
right.
sure.
But I will also say this. I know Damian Tomlinson has taken a lot of heat this season and so on. I don't think he's right. Whatever this toe injury is, and people, listen, we hear about knees and ligaments and hamstrings and groins and all these different things. I'm telling you, a toe injury for a professional athlete, especially a football player that needs to cut, is it ended Deion Sanders' career, it ended Jack Lambert's career, it ended Jonathan Ogden's career. When you watch LT, his inability to cut, to make that quick decision, is definitely not there. I find it hard to believe he's lost it all of a sudden. Now, I will say this. Running backs can lose it all of a sudden. But there's just the tentative way that LaDainian Tomlinson has run this year makes me feel that he is not 100%. The line has not played that well. Again, defensively, we chronicle their problems. But if they come up flat against the Raiders at home, and the Raiders won't come in flat. I will say they've had a couple burps with Tom Gable. They played very hard for Lane Kiffin. I think it took him a week or so to get over, you know, what Al Davis had done in taking the coach away. But they have come back and play hard. I mean, the last week was kind of a weird game, fake field goal for whatever reason and so on, wind up costing them the game and so on. But, listen, they've got some dynamite runners on that team. They have a big, strong, athletic quarterback who at times looks okay, at times looks like a disaster. If they make a good showing against the Chargers, I think I'll be listening more than I'll be watching tonight.
How so?
When it comes to the San Diego crowd.
Oh, okay.
Now, I didn't mean no disrespect to Bob Papa and Chris Collins.
I was about to say.
But I think I'll be listening as much as I'll be watching tonight. How the Chargers, you know, we talk about teams packing it in. Can the Chargers still make the playoffs at 8-8? Sure, they could. They're going to have to run the table to do it and hope they get some help from Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But just because it's unlikely, you know, you don't want your football team to play like it's unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how coaches get fired. So I'll be really interested to see how they come into this game tonight.
Let me jump over to the NFC because there's a really intriguing game Sunday at 1 Eastern, Atlanta playing at New Orleans. I don't know if you consider New Orleans underachieving or not, although they've been very strong at home. But Atlanta at 8-4, you'd have to say right up there, maybe even with the Jets, as being one of the surprises in the entire league. What do you think?
Atlanta, to me, just strikes me, John, as so fundamentally sound. Them and Tampa Bay have been the most consistent teams in that division. I know Carolina's 9-3, but Carolina's been a little erratic at times. But you just know what you're going to get every week with Atlanta right now. Mike Smith has done phenomenal.
I agree. I think that you know he may be. I mean, I think you know Eric Mangini will probably get some recognition for that. I think there'll be two or three other coaches you can throw into the mix. But Mike Smith at Atlanta is
and John Harbaugh in Baltimore. I'll throw it out.
Harbaugh in Baltimore too. Yeah, sure.
Rookie quarterbacks with rookie head coaches.
Right.
And
in both places, and it's remarkable.
Right. And what I'll say is, Baltimore at least had a little bit of a foundation with the defense there. Atlanta really kind of scrapped the team for the most part. And you know, the addition of Michael Turner has been amazing. Matt Ryan, I get the feeling you know Matt a little bit just from being up in that area.
Yeah, but the last couple of years that I did BC, he was a redshirt freshman and sophomore, so he actually got some playing time.
Right. I now, don't read too much into this story, but it's little things that tell me this. I met Matt Ryan at the NFL draft this year.
Mm-hmm.
And just a little personal insight on something that always just strikes me when you meet people, because this really is about people and how they handle themselves and how maturity plays into playing sports and being a leader. Matt Ryan and a number of the top draft picks came in to meet our talent and our production staff and so on. And Matt Ryan was standing around and turned around and introduced himself to me and Howie Schwab and Jim Carr, one of our other research people. And it kind of just struck me. You know, Matt Ryan wasn't there to just meet Chris Berman and Tom Jackson and Chris Carter and Keyshawn Johnson. He was there as a representative already of the National Football League and felt it important to introduce himself. And that sounds like a, Russell, you're blowing that way out of proportion. No, it tells me something about the man, young man, as far as how he handles himself. And I've also talked to other people. We have done pieces with him as well, picked up on the same idea in terms of maturity and leadership. You know, when you're a young guy who steps into a huddle on a football team, Tom Brady did it, Ben Roethlisberger did it, you obviously don't know everything that's going on. Most important thing you can do is not show that to your teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco, like I said, Brady from day one, never let them see you sweat, the old Dan Reeves line and stuff.
Right.
Even if you don't know what you're doing, don't let them know you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
And, you know, him and Turner, the ability to play action, great play by their offensive and defensive line, some big plays from their secondary and so on. They just find different ways to contribute every week, and it seems like every week there's someone new. They have a rookie wide receiver named Harry Douglas from Louisville,
mm-hmm.
who in the last 2 weeks has run for a touchdown, returned a punt for a touchdown, last week caught a touchdown pass. So every little bit, little pieces of the puzzle coming together. New Orleans, yeah, a little bit of disappointment, but I think it's more so on the defense. I mean, Drew Brees got an excellent shot at throwing for over 5,000 yards, and also has an excellent shot of finishing 8-8,
mm-hmm.
Because defensively they don't do much of anything. They are playing at home, but I think this is the statement game for the Falcons. You know, they lost at Tampa earlier this year. They split with Carolina, and I think if they're going to win that division and or get in the playoffs, I think they're the better football team than New Orleans is right now, and they need to prove that on the field.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll stay in the NFC for just a moment, only because I'm slightly intrigued by Philadelphia at the Giants. For some reason or other, even though I know the Eagles are on the road, I give them a chance in this game.
I give them very much a chance and so on. And you know, I think you find in the NFC East, especially with the proximity of some of these teams, that road and home don't mean all that much. I mean, Philly, New York has gone down. I want to say the Giants have won in Philadelphia the last four games, their last four regular season games.
Mm-hmm.
They lost a playoff game there a couple of years ago.
Right.
The Eagles have had their share of success at the Meadowlands as well. I mean, the Giants are a very solid football team. They obviously have other issues that are going on. I shouldn't say it's the Giants. It's actually their suspended wide receiver, because the Giants themselves seem to be handling business as usual. By the way, Giants 11-1, only the fifth time in Super Bowl history that a team won the Super Bowl and came back the year later and had a better win-loss record.
Wow.
They've already assured that. It's the second year in a row, by the way. The Colts did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, if you remember how these teams played earlier in the year, 36-31 Sunday night at Philadelphia, Philly's able to move the ball on the Giants. Couldn't stop them when they had to when it came to the run, and I think that's the key. If Philly can get some muscle up front and stop the Giants' running game from being effective, I think they have an excellent chance. They need to get to Eli two or three times in terms of forcing a turnover. And Eli's been extremely solid this year, but he's always capable of throwing a pick here or two. And I think what the Eagles need to do is, if he turns over the ball a couple times, they need to make him pay immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Intersectional matchup here. Dallas at Pittsburgh. I got to admit, that's going right up against the Patriots in Seattle, which I'll be watching. But let me assure you that I'll have both of the sets going. I'll find a way to either work the picture-in-picture option, or I'll definitely be flicking off during the commercials. Just because, number one, I'm not sure that Pittsburgh is as dominant as they appeared to be last Sunday against the Patriots. But I also get the sense that the Cowboys are starting to get it back into gear a little bit.
Well, I don't think, as football fans, you say Dallas and Pittsburgh, you can only smile.
Well, because some of the greatest games in Super Bowl history were played by these teams.
That's exactly right. The only two franchises ever meet in the Super Bowl three times. And two teams that are kind of intriguing right now. I mean, I agree with you, John. I don't think they're dominant. I looked at the score of the last week's Patriots game, and you know, the Steelers' offense is somewhat methodical. At times it bogs down. But defensively, I mean, you have to give them a nod about how impressive they've been. And I'll throw out stuff besides the obvious numbers of allowed the fewest rushing yards and the fewest pass. I mean, they were one across the board in the major categories. No team's done that since the 91 Eagles with Mike Golick and Reggie White and so on. They've also given up the fewest points in the league. Mm-hmm. They've also had the most sacks in the league. And there's a thing we chart around here called big plays. 30-yard pass plays and 20-yard runs allowed by the defense and or the team that has the most. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Steelers in 12 games this year have given up only three pass plays of 30 or more yards. Two running plays of 20 or more yards. Those are both also the best in the NFL as well. So in other words, and I'm going to bury the lead. They haven't given up more than 300 yards total offense in any game this year.
Which we heard immediately after our game, and that's still a remarkable statistic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the record is 14 games by the 73 Rams. But in any case.
Not even Chicago in 85 did that?
No. Well, I remember what the Miami Dolphins did to them on a Monday night.
Yeah. Wow. Because I think most people consider that 85 Bears defense in modern times to be the best.
Yeah, I mean, them and 2000 Ravens probably, as far as, you know, total, you know, they both had their burps along the way and so on because it's hard to play it that way. But, listen, yards is one thing. I mean, you watched Pittsburgh last week. They get a lot of heat on the corners with James Harrison and Lamar Woodley, and they will attempt to do the same thing against the Cowboys. But I also agree with you with the fact that Dallas is starting to get into a little bit of an offensive groove.
Rhythm,
now,
yeah.
Granted, they have played San Francisco and Seattle the last couple weeks, but that doesn't really matter in terms of execution. They are starting to execute well. The difference of them with Tony Romo in that lineup is startling. I mean, how's this for a comparison of strength versus strength? Tony Romo, John, has thrown 21 touchdown passes in just 9 games. The Steelers' defense, just their defensive unit, has only given up 15 offensive touchdowns in 12 games.
Wow.
So Romo, I want to say Romo's thrown 3 or more touchdown passes in 5 of the 9 games.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he puts it up. I don't expect the Steelers to hold them under 300 yards this week. I just don't see it. And if I want to give you a little X and O tip, besides hugs and kisses, watch the tight ends in this game. Both these teams play 3-4 defenses, which a lot of times you're vulnerable to the tight end. And there's two pretty good ones. One is very good. One is exceptionally good. The exceptionally good one is Jason Witten, of course.
Right.
And Heath Miller is a very good tight end who sometimes doesn't get the pub of the other guys.
Jason Witten is one of the best in the game as far as I'm concerned. With
absolutely.
His ability to, you know, not only catch in traffic, but to actually do something with the ball once he catches it.
And regardless if he has his helmet on or not.
Yeah, that's true. He's a gritty, gutsy guy. I can understand why he's one of Romo's favorite targets. One other intersectional game that I think will have some real interest is Washington-Baltimore on the NBC game Sunday night.
Yeah, switched on as the flex game and so on. And
Think about the I-95 corridor rivalry going on there. You know,
I believe the Redskins are taking cabs.
Why not?
I think there's going to be a cab taken.
Is this one of the few times that you'll actually have a road game
NFL
where you can actually bus into and out of and be able to sleep in your own bed after the game is over?
You know, the metro system in D.C. is very nice. I don't know if it connects to Baltimore, but I know you can take the Acela train from Washington to Baltimore.
Yeah,
so who knows how they're going to get it. But in any case, you know, the Redskins have, you know, struggled as of late, lost 3 of their last 4 games. Baltimore just came off blowing out Cincinnati. Joe Flacco, their defense, they're getting contributions from everybody. Now Mark Clayton, not the Mark Clayton, but Mark Clayton, who threw a touchdown pass along a catching, made great one-handed grab at Cincinnati last week. You know, Baltimore won't go away. And that makes it intriguing for Pittsburgh. And Washington, of course, is hovering behind the Cowboys in terms of wild card and so on. So both these teams with a lot on the line. You know, Jason Campbell's much improved in terms of not turning over the football. But, you know, when he saw Pittsburgh's defense on that Monday night, he was not prepared for it. Got sacked seven times, threw a couple of picks. I think he could face similar problems this week with Baltimore's defense.
Well, I'll tell you what pains me about this game is because as a Cowboy fan, you know, growing up as a Cowboy fan, as you well know, I have to root for Washington. And the reason that I want root for Washington here is not, has nothing to do with the Cowboys. It has everything to do with the Patriots because if you're a Patriot fan, you're not getting any help from Cincinnati this week playing the Colts.
No, that's not true. That is absolutely true.
You need to have Washington beat Baltimore to give the Patriots another option to squeeze into the playoffs.
Right. And, you know, it's funny, you know, just to touch on Indy for a bit, you know, when they were 3-4, a lot of people were like, uh-oh, the end of the line. You know, we forget that Indy in past years has started off seasons 9-0, 13-0, 7-0.
And
like
now, they're reversing it.
Now they might finish out the season. I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying they've won 5 in a row, and they're suddenly 8-4. They have Cincinnati, Detroit, Jacksonville, and Tennessee. Again, I'm not saying that because they're all winnable games. I hate that statement. But my point is, they're starting to gain a little momentum, and they're still not 100%. Bob Sanders has been out the last couple weeks. They just lost Jeff Saturday. I think that's why they had so much problem with Cleveland last week. You know, their offense didn't score a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jamie Richard is a rookie center, and he's lining up against Sean Rogers. What could happen? You know? You know, hopefully for them, they have Jeff Saturday down the stretch. Maybe the last two games when you have to line up against somebody like Albert Haynesworth in one game and John Henderson in the other game. But the Colts, you know, just like the Patriots, you know, when they won their 21 straight regular season games, did we think they could do that? Sure. Why? Because we saw them win 21 straight games before.
Mm-hmm.
When you've done it before, it's easier to predict that can happen again. That's I like those odds a lot better than somebody saying, well, they play four easy games. No. If there's a knack to putting together a long winning streak, it doesn't happen by accident. But the Colts are on a nice little roll, and Cincinnati just looks like they've, lack of a better word, have rolled over, and unfortunately I think it's going to cost Marvin Lewis his job.
Yeah, it sure would appear to be that way. Within the division, and I'm just going to mention this without necessarily diving into the matchups here, but obviously the Jets are playing at San Francisco, so at least it is a road game for the Jets. And then Miami's playing at Buffalo, and that one has a little intrigue because it's a, you know, good old-fashioned rock'em sock'em AFC East game, but, you know, Buffalo could do everybody a huge favor here by knocking Miami, you know, into the dirt this weekend, and potentially taking the Dolphins out of the mix.
Yeah, I know. And you know, Miami has to go north to Buffalo. You know, they usually don't fare well up there. You know, freezing cold, coming from the south. You know how that is, John,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Except that the game is in Toronto.
Yeah, right.
And I believe it's indoors.
Yes, it is. It's got a stadium roof on it. Yes, that's true.
So
last I checked, yeah.
Unfortunately, the Bills didn't do themselves any favor.
They didn't do themselves any favor. And I understand why they're doing it, you know, the whole, you know,
totally
Toronto market. I get it. Because
I totally get it.
Yeah.
It's just funny.
Just the timing is rotten. It's
right.
Rotten.
And here's the fact. You know, when the Bills lost those three straight games in the division, it put them into a tailspin that they haven't been able to recover from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've lost five of their last six games now. And, you know, can they beat the Dolphins? Absolutely. You know, Miami is 7-5. They've done it mainly by not making mistakes. They have the fewest turnovers in the league, by the way. Miami's turned it over 10 times in 12 games. But we also saw them struggle against the Raiders. We also saw them struggle against Seattle. There's a real fine line with the Dolphins. So they're not exactly blowing anybody out. They struggled with the Rams last week. So can Buffalo make a few big plays? Absolutely. And I think big plays will be what they shoot for because it more than likely will be J.P. Lossman this week and not Trent Edwards.
Mm.
So, you know, Edwards was hurt last week. That'll be interesting. As far as the Jets and the Niners, listen, we saw the Jets' defense against a passing attack last week. Jay Cutler threw for 357 yards.
That's true.
The Niners are not shy about throwing the football. And don't be surprised that, I mean, I'm not saying the Jets will lose, but I think the Niners will make it interesting. I don't think there's any question about it. They'll definitely put some points in the board. Could you see a 30-20 game? Absolutely. Could the Niners beat them? Absolutely. I think the Jets still have too many things in their arsenal and want to bounce back from last week's disappointing effort, but I think the Niners are very game here.
The Sunday night game on Monday night game on ESPN, Tampa Bay and Carolina. It's a good one. Both teams 9-3. Both teams, you know, fighting for their divisional lives. You know, that's as good a late season matchup I think as you're liable to find on the schedule.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Like when we you know, when the Monday night schedule comes out and so on, obviously everybody, especially, you know, our people here, probably trying to figure out, you know, was that a good move? Was that a good move? Did we get a good game? Did we get a good game? And as you well know, sometimes you look at stuff that looks very promising mm-hmm. and it never pans out.
Right.
And yet, when I'm sure, when me and I'm not quoting anybody here, but when we saw Tampa Bay, Carolina, we're like, okay, Tampa Bay, Carolina. Well, who would have known they'd be 9-3 apiece? And, you know, both of these teams who have Super Bowl experience in the last 5 years, six years, you know, with Tampa Bay mm-hmm. and Carolina the year after that, very highly competitive. Nobody in that division has a losing record this year. Tampa Bay's been the steadier team. Carolina's been a bit erratic. When Carolina loses, they lose bad. But they've got a hot running combination, D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. Williams has been on fire as of late. And keep an eye on Tampa Bay's offensive line, and Julius Peppers, who made the switch from left side to right side this year. He will try to get his hands on Jeff Garcia. Garcia is very resourceful. This has field goal game written all over it, I think.
I think the amazing thing, and by the way, obviously it's for the leadership in the NFC South, and we've already mentioned Atlanta as well. I think one of the amazing stories about this football season, you've got not one, not two, but three divisions in the NFL that have teams at 500 or better.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
one being our own, of course.
Right. And one, of course, is, what also is interesting about the NFC South is, you know, there's a little funny stat that the team, since the NFC South was formed, the team that finished last, say the last, you know, in 2002,
mm-hmm.
the team that finished last in 2002, I believe, was Carolina.
Yeah.
They win the division. It has held up every year. Since the NFC South, now
the last place team moves to first.
The last place team has rebounded to win first.
Wow, that's amazing!
It is amazing. And when we, of course, for people who watch our network and watch some of our funny spots, you know, we did a piece with a funny spot with the guys where they at the Antique Roadshow,
right?
And they talk about the NFC South, and Chris Carter broke the cat. But mm-hmm. as you heard more than there, well. You know, the team that finishes last always finishes first. Mm-hmm. And Chris Carter, before he drops the cat, says, well, that bodes well for the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they're like, oh, yeah, well, maybe that streak is going to end.
Not necessarily.
Okay? Not necessarily. Just like, and I don't say this, I just say this not knowing what we knew was going to happen to Tom Brady. Everybody talked all year, you know, every year, the team that doesn't win the Super Bowl loses the Super Bowl, doesn't make the
doesn't
playoffs.
Doesn't make the playoffs. Okay? That's right.
Now, like, well, we knew that was going to end this year with the Patriots coming back and so on.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
But that's amazing.
But for different reasons.
Yeah, true. I mean, but I mean, that's
team,
that's.
I want to say it's six of the last 7 years. The only team to make it back to the playoffs was Seattle.
After losing the Super
After
Bowl.
After losing the Super Bowl, going back six or I want to say it's six of the last seven.
Right.
Or seven of the last eight.
You know, honestly, Russell. I mean, it's hard for me to recall Seattle being in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just because, and I brought this up with Warren Moon yesterday. I had a chance to visit with him, and you know, and I'd have brought up the word mediocre in conjunction with Seattle, and I think he took offense by my question. And I didn't mean to say that Seattle has been mediocre, but I said, you know, there was a run there in the 90s, and I wasn't specifically going to say when you were quarterback there, Warren, but I mean, there was a time there in the 90s when Seattle was 7-9, 9-7, 8-8, 6-10.
2-14, John.
Yeah, well, that also. But, I mean, of late, since Mike Holmgren has been a part of the program, it has been one of the stronger teams in the NFL until this year. But you don't necessarily think of them as a championship-contending team.
Right. In 1992, the Seahawks set a 16-game record by scoring 140 points in a season.
Right.
Okay. You're right. Throughout the night, why did they bring in Mike Holmgren? Because they were doing well? No, because they were struggling.
Well, they were struggling and or they were not doing any better than mediocre.
Exactly. And by the way, since we are talking about streaks and things that we didn't think would end, and this is a perfect segue for New England and Seattle.
Sure.
Colts have won the AFC South 5 years in a row.
Right.
Is that going to happen?
No.
The Patriots have won the AFC East 5 years in a row.
It could happen.
Still could happen.
It still could happen.
Still could happen. Seahawks have already been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, so their streak of NFC West titles ends at four.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three longest streaks in the league in terms of division titles.
So two are done, and one could be done.
Right. So all theoretically, all that stuff could happen in 1 year.
You know, I mean, this is what the founding fathers wanted, wasn't it? They wanted parity. They wanted.
Pete Rozelle has a smile on his face.
Yes, he does.
I hope he gets the NFL Network where he is, though. That I'm not sure of.
I don't know. Do they have that south of the border? I'm kidding.
No, I thought you did that very politely.
Thank you very much. All right, so now that we're talking about the Patriots in Seattle, I think all of us here in New England feel like the Patriots have to win out. And even though mathematically, even if they do win out, it's still possible for them to miss the playoffs.
Sure.
But fact is, winning out, I think they'd feel pretty good about their chances. What do you think?
I agree. And, you know, I've said for a couple of weeks now that the AFC East is going to come down to the final Sunday when New England plays Buffalo and the Jets play Miami. And, listen, the Patriots last week, or I should say Matt Castle, and this is not a knock on Matt Castle, but it happens to young quarterbacks. There's playing against a 3-4 defense in practice like they do with the Patriots, and then there's playing the zone blitz, which the Steelers run better than anyone, and they run it. That is their base defense, the zone blitz. And the zone blitz doesn't mean that you run and throw 11 guys into the fire. It's based on confusion. We saw Jason Campbell on a Monday night struggle with it. Last week, we saw Matt Castle struggle with it. I mean, how much do you think you really learn in 11 starts to face one a veteran defense and a veteran defensive coordinator like Dick LeBeau? Okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm bringing that up for this reason. Let's not all of a sudden, after crowning Matt Castle, all of a sudden just see what happened last week and give him no credit at all. Okay? He hung in there pretty good against something he probably wasn't familiar with at all.
Yeah.
That being said, the Seattle Seahawks don't pose the same defensive problems as the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the one thing I've liked with the Patriots, even with all the talk of Castle with the 400-yard passing games, they've also been running the football pretty well. I think they're a $120 on the ground.
Yeah, decently. Decent.
Yeah, but that's enough.
Right.
And they're getting the attempts as well. I think there's just been this – it's been floated out there that they're all Castle and so on. And it's he's thrown for all these yards.
Well, no, people call the Patriots all Brady when he was playing too. Yes, they did.
Yes, they did. But in this sense, when you really look at them, I mean – regardless who the running back is, boy, you're learning that around the league right now. Denver's on about its sixth tailback this year.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Jarvis, Greenell, Sammy Morris, Kevin Falk, who's just one of the best football players in the league, by the way.
Right, he is.
Okay,
he's invaluable. He has turned into Troy Brown time. Troy Brown the second, basically doing a little bit of everything for this team, except he hasn't gone over to the defensive side of the ball yet.
You know what? He's kind of Troy Brown with a smattering of Brian Westbrook, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I could certainly see that.
Yeah. He might not exactly have the explosiveness that Westbrook has at times, but I'm talking about as far as playing the game of football.
He's an invaluable piece
to
this puzzle.
Absolutely. You know, some of the plays he made last week against the Steelers defense, draw plays and so on, it was his cutting ability that made those plays as much as anything.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, Seattle's had a very disappointing year, especially on the defensive side of the ball. The Patriots, listen, they had a bad game last week. I don't expect that to happen 2 weeks in a row. And I like them to rebound smartly, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think that the whole 17-1 thing since 2003 after a loss is looming large this week. I just hope the Patriots don't, believe in their own press. I hope they go out and do it on the field.
Well, I think after what happens to you last week, I think you forget about that press-wise. And, listen, they've beaten the NFC 13 games in a row in the regular season, so... let's see if that streak continues as well.
Absolutely. All right. Russell, as always, great to visit with you again. I'm glad your holiday was spent well with the turkey and the football and everything else. And now we're getting into crunch time. So, if we hadn't had any fun before, which I know we have, it's going to be even more fun over the next 4 weeks. This is my favorite time of year when we, start talking about the playoff chase in the National Football League.
That's exactly right. And see, when I hear Jaws, tell everybody in America that Russell Baxter can't stand to hear the words that the season ended today, like he did to me a week and a half ago. Now you know exactly why.
Because that's
now
right.
We are. Listen, it was turkey last week, but now we're into the meat of the NFL.
Yeah, that's right. Where's the beef, baby?
Prime beef.
That's right. Good analogy, Russell. Appreciate that. By the way, I know you've been, you and I have been yapping, but have you given that trivia question any more thought?
I still can't say the answer, can I?
Well,
because I know the first one.
Dan, has anybody emailed back through with other than the first one? Nobody has yet. So, see, nobody's gotten it yet.
The first one's obvious.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my first – did you understand what my guess was when I said DL?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Let him give initials.
You want him to give initials? All right. Well, so, all right, here you go, kids. If you're still interested in those tickets, and nobody has yet come through with the answer that can, we've had a couple of correct answers, but they can't claim the tickets. So there's a key here. You got to be able to claim the tickets tonight to come to the game. All right, so give the initials.
Well, RG is one.
That's one.
Okay, and my other guess was DL, but I don't think that's correct.
No, so you got the one that we thought was harder.
Oh. No, I thought actually that was the easier one.
Nope.
Okay.
No, really, it's the other way around. You want me to give you the initials?
Give me the initials, and I'll kick myself because I should know it.
JP.
Oh, my goodness. So do you know what happened? I got hung up on, for some reason, I started thinking the Bills and not the Patriots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. That's one of my favorite stories of all time.
Mm-hmm. Such an idiot.
I do feel like an idiot.
Just goes to show you, you know, sometimes things just go whoosh right over your head.
You know what? That's exactly what happened. You know, when I said RG, and then all of a sudden I started thinking.
Yeah. You start
Buffalo.
Going another direction. Yeah, you start going another direction.
Buffalo and not New England.
Right, right.
And I'm like.
No, there you go.
That's what happens.
All right. Hey, great to talk to you as always.
You too.
We'll do it again next Thursday?
Absolutely.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, man.
That is Russell Baxter, who, of course, is the NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, visiting with us, as he does here in the Playbook every Thursday. All right, well, now you've got the open queue. You've been given a huge hint. If you can still make the game tonight, live in the area or within driving distance of the area and want to claim those tickets to the Raiders-Chargers 3D game tonight here at Patriot Place, then now's the time to pick up the phone and do it, 508-543-7482. And we'll also accept your email answers if you can use the tickets. Let's take a timeout, Dan, and then we'll come back and continue with more Inside the Playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips, and we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, back inside the playbook, we have a winner. It didn't take us very long after we gave the hints and everything. Actually, technically, I think the answer came just before we actually gave the hints. So, do we have our winner? That's the one that we... Okay, all right, that's good. John sent in the correct answer, and I guess he's going to get the tickets off to his brother who lives in Massachusetts, and that's perfectly all right. John gave the correct answer. The two quarterbacks who are considered two of the best who have played the game for Oakland, originally selected by the Patriots, are Rich Gannon and Jim Plunkett. So congratulations to John, and you've got the two seats for you, or I guess in this case your brother, and he'll be going to see the Oakland Raiders-San Diego Chargers game tonight in 3D at the Showcase Cinema Deluxe here in Foxborough at Patriot Place. So congratulations. See, that's cool. It's very cool that we have stuff to give away from time to time here on the show, and you know, you got the whole Qdoba thing every week on PFW in Progress, and try to get some tickets here every now and then to give away, so I think that's a good thing. It's all, you know, part of, you know, the whole infotainment thing around here is we try to keep you involved and active. We are going to let you listen into Seattle head coach Mike Holmgren's conference call with members of the Patriots media from earlier here in just a little bit as part of the program today. Oh, it's a big one, huh, too? All right. Well, then we'll get to that here in just a couple of moments, and we'll wrap up the show with that because, you know, frankly, he has been a focal point. He has been the focal point, really, of – to me, everything that's gone wrong with the Seahawks this year. There's been this kind of cloud hovering over the team. And I realize there's a lot of injuries, and fact is that the physical makeup of the Seattle defense has been maligned, and perhaps rightfully so. I mean, they were looking for speed, and what they ended up getting was hurt a lot. And that is, of course, the danger, you know, to trying to get quicker. You have to try to get smaller. So that's why it's a tough process than a lot of people think. It's a tougher process than a lot of people think. You can't just necessarily get smaller. You got to have physical players as well because, you know, guys get hurt if they're smaller. I mean, you're just – look at it. It's the physics of the thing. You can't have 200-pound guys smashing into 270-pound guys and expect to live for too long if you make a regular habit out of it. And that's been part of the problem with the Seattle defense. Now, I'm over-exaggerating on those points, but fact is that's the basic crux of the matter. And so, you know, while the Seahawks organization and Coach Holmgren in particular have taken a lot of hits for that, it's probably somewhat deserved. Now, it's a unique situation because you've got your hand-picked, already signed replacement as head coach on the staff in Jim Mora. And so if you're a player, and this was brought out a couple of days ago when we were talking about this with the Seattle Times beat writer, you know, if you're a player on this team, you can't afford to dog it or just give up at 2-10 because these guys are playing for their jobs for next year already, and they've still got a month left to go in this season. So it's a little bit of a unique situation in Seattle. Seattle is not what I would call your quote-unquote typical 2-10 team. Now, before you say, oh, you're overgeneralizing, well, you have to really kind of examine it. Number one, this is a team and a franchise that has built itself up and out of mediocrity over the last few years. Yes, it's just a few years removed from a Super Bowl. We know that. They have had some good success. They have fallen very quickly, but a lot of that is because of the depth and the defense and the injuries, and you pile all those three things together, you're going to get 2-10. It's just what happens. It's pretty clear to see that from top to bottom, that organization is not as deep as New England's. Because nobody's really had more quality, as I would call them, injuries in the Patriots, and yet the Patriots are still finding themselves with their heads above water, at least at this stage, compared to some of the others that have been really bitten hard by injuries, like Seattle. Seattle's not that far off. And so the guys that are there, especially the younger ones that are playing for jobs, this is what would worry Eric Scalavino and some others if you're at all concerned about this game on Sunday, because Seattle is a dangerous team. It's hard to believe that a 2-10 team would be dangerous, but they are. This game is more fearful to me than the San Francisco game earlier this year. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's kind of how I look at it. I do think this game will go into the fourth quarter. Hopefully, you know, by my way of thinking, the Patriots score halfway through the quarter and hopefully, you know, make it a two-possession game, and that's what ends up taking Seattle out of it late. But, you know, I'm thinking right around the range of 27-28-17 is what I'm looking at, and it could be closer than that. So Mike Holmgren's departure and leaving this team in its current state is a huge topic of conversation within Seattle, and the Patriots are going to find themselves right in the middle of that conversation in the Pacific Northwest this weekend when they travel to Seattle to take on the Seahawks in the first game of the two straight again on the road out west for the second time this year. Some of the unusual things that we've talked about in terms of you know, how that is this week. I mentioned this, I think it was yesterday. The fact that it's the first time in team history that New England will play four times on the West Coast in the same season, and both the Patriots and the Jets are playing all four West Coast teams this season, and they're the first NFL teams from the Eastern time zone to play four times on the West Coast since the Giants did it in 05. And the Giants did reach the playoffs in 05. So if you're looking at omens, that's probably a good omen for the Pats. It's certainly a good omen for the Jets. The Jets have San Francisco this weekend. So at any rate, some interesting stuff going on there. Let's wrap up today's program by letting you have a chance to visit or listen into the Patriots media conversation via conference call with Mike Holmgren of the Seattle Seahawks. And then we'll be back here inside the playbook. Same Pats time, same Pats channel next Tuesday, kids.
Off, Mike. Tell us what's going on out there this season. Obviously, hasn't really unfolded the way I'm sure you hoped it would.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's been an unusual year right from the get-go, you know. But I've been very proud of the players. The guys that are left standing have been going like crazy. We just haven't been quite good enough. We have four games left. There's a lot of pride in the locker room still. There's still a good feeling in the locker room. But going through a season like this is new for a lot of them. And it's new for me, quite honestly. So my job is to keep them going, keep them playing hard until the end. And then next year, you know, this type of injury situation shouldn't occur again.
I did want to ask you about the injuries because, you know, no coach, no player will ever really use injuries as an excuse. I just wanted to ask you if you've charted where your injury situation ranks, you know, compared to the rest of the league in terms of man games lost.
Well, I think I have not done that.
Okay.
I think we have people here that do that, but I have kind of told them I don't really want to be reminded of that or know where it is. Mm-hmm. And I think injuries. Shoot, the Patriots have had injuries. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the best player, one of the best players in football, got hurt in the first game. So. Every team gets hurt. Some teams, I think it's a credit to New England and to Bill that the team is doing so well even after the injuries they've had, you know, but they have a good football team and they were able to withstand that better, certainly better than we have. But I think it's at times you look at where you get hurt and how that has affected your particular situation. Every team's different. And in our case, you know, it was pretty disruptive.
Mike, I know, you know, being around the game as long as you've been, I mean, are you at all curious if injuries are just in general up around the league? I mean, is that something that you concern yourself with at this time, or is that something you might look at, let's say, after the season?
Well, I'm not going to look at much after the season except my motorcycle and my swimming fins,
yes,
you know.
Yes, I did want to ask you about that after this.
Yeah. But so I'll let someone else worry about the injuries. But this year, this has been—I don't know. I think
you might have a year where it's a little bit higher or lower. I don't think there's anything. I don't think anyone would be able to pinpoint that. The players are bigger and stronger, and we all know that kind of stuff, and they're always studying the shoes and studying the fields and all that. But the simple fact is football is a different sport that way. The injury factor is definitely part of our world in this game. And you just keep your fingers crossed that, you know, that you can, you don't get big ones and you don't get key guys hurt. And sometimes that doesn't happen. And I know this, that the teams that typically are playing at the end of the year, you know, have typically are the teams that have been most healthy.
And you mentioned what you're going to be doing after this season, and I'm sure you've been asked this question probably on every conference call you've done and by your own media out there. What are your plans? I mean, could you be wooed by, let's say, an organization looking for a general manager, or are you firm, I'm out next year?
You know what, right now I'm looking at it like I'm going to take a year off. That's how I'm looking at it right now. And if you ask my wife, Kathy, that's definitely how she's looking at it right now. So, you know, we thought, and I thought long and hard about this before I came back for this season. And, you know, now I've had, you know, 17 years in a row of being a head coach in the league, and I've learned some things about myself and also some things I don't bounce back from so well. And so I think it's the right time for me to kind of get recharged and step back and maybe learn a little bit more about myself in the next year. So right now that's what we're going to do.
This might be a tough question, you know, to answer now, and maybe it's something better for after the season. But, you know, this situation where it seems like your replacement is in-house, has that at all been tough, Mike? I mean, has it led to any awkward situations at all, if you could comment on that?
No, I think that's a very fair question, and it's something that we knew was going to come up. The only thing I had wished for at the time was that particular, even though I wanted people in the building to know what the situation was, particularly the coaching staff, that I didn't want it to be that public. And when it went public, of course, the cat's out of the bag. And so, but Jim Mora has been here. He's been the secondary coach. He'll be the next coach of the Seahawks. And Jim and I spoke a number of times about how we wanted this to go this year, prior to the year starting. And he's been great. I mean, he's coaching this like crazy, coaching the secondary. And I can honestly say, even though people, because of our record, would like to think that's been part of it, and I can honestly say it hasn't had anything to do with it. You know, the players have responded to me the way they always have. It's just too bad that we're having the season we're having, because then it opens up some sort of questions about how they're doing this. I think the organization is comfortable. I know the organization is comfortable with how they did it, and you know, it's I did it because I didn't want the speculation going in my last year, is he coming back and all that, taken away from the football team. And it's just too bad that, you know, that we didn't play a little bit better this year.
And just to follow up on that, what are the potential challenges of that type of arrangement? I mean, we see the same thing in Indianapolis with Jim Caldwell and Tony Dungy. They've sort of made a similar thing there. And it seems like it would almost make sense in some respects, Mike, you know, to know you have the next guy lined up. But I guess there's also some challenges with that, too. What are some of those, if there are?
Well, I think what you have to think about is, how is it going to affect the players? That's the number one thing. And, yeah, you know, a lot of these players have been with me a long time. I've been here 10 years. They know how I operate. They know my emotions. They know. And I don't think I've changed this year. I think had I changed and had the dynamic on the field or at practice or in meetings been different, then I think you open yourself up to maybe the players saying, well, who should we look to? But if you don't change that, if you approach it as business as usual, then I don't think there's a problem. I really don't. And you know, I'm a demonstrative guy. I'm an emotional coach. And the players knew. I had a long, good meeting with them at the beginning of the year, and they've been super about it. And so I think if you handle it right, if you do it right, and everyone knows what the program is, you got a chance to make it work.
Mike, what about some of the things that maybe aren't in your control, though? I mean, I know
you're well aware that the job at the University of Washington has been open for some time now, and obviously Coach Moore, having played there, there have been rumors swirling around about it and everything else. Is that maybe the negative of the whole thing, that if a rumor like that comes up, then all of a sudden it might kind of put everybody in a tough spot?
Well, I think that could happen. Absolutely, that could happen. And that rumor was floating around here pretty strongly. But I have very little to do with that. I as the head coach of the Seahawks, I'm concerned with what I'm doing. I think, though, when things like that, if things were like that were to come up, you know, with the heir apparent, you know, in this case, Jim Mora, then the organization and Jim, they have to work that out. Then that has to be clear. And I think everyone has to be upfront and honest about it. I mean, you know, in this day and age, if you want to be a college head coach and have the opportunity, if you want to, you have to make those decisions as a coach. And I think it's only reasonable and fair that you're honest with the organization.
So you think that, but you'd stay out of it, and if Coach Moore did have a change of heart, do you think that'd be understandable?
If he had a change of heart and decided to do what?
Decided that he might want the Washington job instead of the Seahawks job.
Yeah, I'm kind of out of that. I mean, I have my hands full trying to figure out how to pick up the blitz against the Patriots, you know. if I was in charge, say I was dealing with the coach in this area, I would expect that coach to be upfront with me. I would be honest with him. And I think that's how you conduct business. I just don't see that as being a particular problem as long as both sides are willing to be upfront.
Getting back to the Patriots, they have had a lot of injuries, like you mentioned, but is it still somewhat surprising to see a team that's had so much success, of three championships, almost undefeated last year, to be kind of on the cusp of maybe not making the playoffs, to see the change that has happened so quickly over the last year for them?
Well, I think, you know, I've had to do a lot of thinking about this because of our own injury situation. But in trying to evaluate our situation, I think, and the Patriots are so good that they have been able to withstand this and still are in the playoff hunt. In our case, you know, let's just assume for a second that you were a 12-4, or at least projected to be a 12-4, 11-5 team, and win your division and do all that. Okay, bang, you lose your quarterback. I don't care who you are. And I'm not talking about a Tom Brady type quarterback, your starting quarterback. Typically, okay, you can automatically, that's two or three games, automatically. Now, in our case, we lost the quarterback, then we lost all of our wide receivers. Not only the starters, but the backups, and then the two guys we hired from the Chevron station. All of them. You know. Now, that's two or three. There's another two games. Then you lose four offensive linemen. That's another two games. And then you lose your top defensive player, Patrick Kearney. That's another two games. So, you know, they absolutely have an effect on what your win-loss record's going to be. And like I said, it's a real tribute to the Patriots, I think, to see where they are. Now, it's a little shocked, I suppose, to everyone's system because they've been so good and, heck, undefeated, for Pete's sakes, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's what this business is. Injuries do affect the outcome of games and the outcome of your season.
If you...